Today is February the 24th, Sunday a.m. on Nehemiah. We had left off with chapter 4 last week and finished it and looked at the temptations and the avenues of escape that were the temptations that faced Nehemiah and the people. Is there any other thoughts or comments this morning over chapter 4? Okay, we'll go ahead and start with chapter 5 this morning. Chapter 5 opens with a great outcry taking place from within the people against their fellow Jews. Not only did Nehemiah face external hindrances, but we find that he also faced internal hindrances in the work. In this, we can see how Satan can attack from all sides to bring about discouragement so as to make one's work unproductive or to dishearten an individual in his endeavors. There are several complaints or grievances that are brought about from the common people against the nobles and the rulers here in chapter 5. The complaints or the grievances that are listed is, you find starting in verse 2, there was a great outcry in verse 1 of the people and of their wives against their Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, "We, our sons and our daughters, are many, therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live." The people needed relief to provide food for their families so that they could survive during the current famine. We know that there was a famine that was taking place at this time because that's mentioned in verse 3. He says, "And there were others who said, 'We are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, our houses, that we might get grain because of the famine.'" So there was a famine that was taking place. As we mentioned last week, there's recorded in Scripture 13 famines that have took place through the land. There were some who had pledged their fields, their vineyards, and houses to obtain food, to obtain the corn. They had been forced to mortgage their land, vineyards, and houses to the wealthier Jews to provide food. So those that were nobles and those that were affluent had the money to be able to supply to the people. And, of course, in return, they took ownership of the lands, the fields, the crops, whatever, in verse 3. In verse 4, there were those also who said, "We have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards." There's some that had been forced to borrow money to pay their taxes that was due to the king. There was taxation that was still taking place and still going on that the people had to pay to the king. And I'm sure within that, there was probably some of that that was kept also by Sanballat, being of Samaria, the governor, and so forth, that it was probably extended out not just for the king, Artaxerxes, but for others also within that area. But here they had borrowed silver to pay the king's tribute that was placed on their lands and on their vineyards. So they had to pay that or else it would be took away. Well, if you didn't have the money to do it, you had to go to someone that would be able to give you the money for that, to borrow the money. In verse 5, we find that now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, our children like their children. The money borrowed from the wealthy Jews had placed their children into slavery as bond servants, and it was not in their power to redeem them. When you look at it, it says, you know, we're both Jewish people. Our children are like your children, but yet now we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves, and some of our daughters are forced into bondage already, and we are helpless because our fields and vineyards belong to others. With this, they became very angry because those that were the nobles and the rulers of the Jews that had the affluence, their sons and daughters weren't in bondage. They didn't have any of this problem, but they were the ones that were taking advantage of those that had need. And in this, they didn't even have the funds or the availability to be able to redeem. Once you get caught in that cycle to where you're borrowing and borrowing, and then you're committed to building on the wall, and you're not able to do that, and your crops and your fields are mortgaged by others, and you're having to give that away to those that have the ownership of it, you just get in a hole and you can't get out. And so, therefore, they had an option to be able to redeem their children if they had the funds available to redeem them, but here they weren't able to. They had nothing else left since their land and their vineyards were owned by other Jews. So their children were given in bondage to provide food, and this was set in that. Now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, our children like their children. Yet, behold, we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves, and some of their daughters are forced into bondage, and we are helpless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others. And so they brought this accusation and this grievance again up to Nehemiah. Put yourself in their place during this time. Can you imagine how this must have felt as a parent in having to give your child or your children as a bondservant to another person in order to provide subsistence, in order to have your daily food? How would you have felt? In that, this brought about alienation. It brought about hard feelings. It brought about resentment between the Jews because their loans with interest and the servitudes that they were being made with no hope of redeeming them back from the wealthy, whether it was sons, daughters, land, houses, or vineyards, they were out. There was no way that they could be able to bring that back. So naturally, the emotions and the feelings about it were brought about between the two. In that, the result of these dedicated people rebuilding the wall was sinking them deeper and deeper into poverty. And the wealthier Jews were taking advantage of this to increase their wealth. All of this was at the expense of their fellow brothers. Why did they bring that to Nehemiah's attention? It seems perfectly natural in order to do that. That would be the way the economy would have worked. That would be the way things would have been. The wealthier, you know, here can give assistance and so forth. Why would they have brought that grievance and that complaint to Nehemiah? Before, as you looked at, when we looked at Nehemiah, was under which law? He was still under the Mosaic law. And did the Mosaic law speak about such items as this? Is that why they brought about the complaint and the grievance to Nehemiah as being the governor? Nehemiah, we're bringing this forward. This isn't right. When you go back and look, the law was explicit concerning pledges and usury. Usury is just another term that they used back then for interest that was being applied and taken. When you go back to Exodus, the 22nd chapter. Exodus, the 22nd chapter. Back in the laws that God had set about through Moses concerning these items. In verse 25. If you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you are not to act as a creditor to him. You shall not charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, you are to return it to him before the sun sets. For that is his only covering. It is his cloak for his body. What else shall he sleep in? And it shall come about that when he cries out to me, I will hear him, for I am gracious. Again, you see here the compassion that God had for mankind, the compassion. If he cries out because he has in this deep turmoil and doesn't have anything, even before the sun sets, you return his pledge back to him. You give his cloak back to him because how's what he's going to do? And if he cries out in desperation and oppression, then God's going to be angry. You're always going to have the poor among you. And it's how God expected them to treat the poor that was among them. Usury here, or interest, was a transgression. It was a sin. When you look at Leviticus, the 25th chapter. The 25th chapter. Not only were they charging interest, but they were also going into servitude when they were able to borrow money, and then they didn't have anything else to redeem with or to pay back from, and then they mortgaged their lands and so forth. All of this was covered in the law. Then they put their children into bondage. In Exodus, the 25th chapter, starting in verse 35, you have those that were poor. Now, in case a countryman of yours becomes poor, and his means with regard to you falter, then you are to sustain him like a stranger or a sojourner, that he may live with you. Do not take usurious interest from him, but revere your God, that your countrymen may live with you. You shall not give him your silver at interest, nor your food for gain. For I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. And if a countryman of yours becomes so poor with regard to you that he sells himself to you, you shall not subject him to a slave's service. He shall be with you as a hired man, as if he were a sojourner with you until the year of Jubilee. He shall then go out from you, he and his sons with him, and shall go out back to his family, that he may return to the property of his forefathers. For they are my servants whom I brought out from the land of Egypt, that they are not to be sold in a slave sale. You shall not rule over him with severity, but are to revere your God. Again, if you were sold, you were to be a hired servant. Not a servant in bondage that wasn't hired. There was not to be any usurage, no interest, no increase. But yet they were doing exactly the opposite. They were making bond servants out of these people and not for hire. So again, the law specifically stated. And when you look at Deuteronomy, the 15th chapter. Deuteronomy, the 15th chapter. Starting in verse 7, again the restating. If there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns in your land, which the Lord your God has given you, you shall not hold in your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother. But you shall freely open your hand to him and shall generously lend him sufficient for his need and whatever he lacks. Beware lest there is a base thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of remission is near, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin to you. There was provisions in the law that after a certain amount of time, year of Jubilee and other amounts, that they were no longer in bondage. They could be released from that. And here he's talking about if your eye become hostile, if you see, oh, well, his time's coming up, I'm going to do something so that he can't have that freedom or gain that release. That's what the Lord is speaking about against. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin in you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. If your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve you 6 years, but in the seventh year you shall set him free. And when you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock, from your threshing floor, and from your wine vat. You shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore I command you this day. It was required of them to lend to meet the poor's need, to give liberally. Again, there was many thoughts in this. Number one, who is the person that gives all the benefits in life? Who is the person that gives freely to all mankind? God is the one that does that. It's within His power. He's the one that sustains mankind. He's the one that gives freely on that. And it was something that they needed to learn, to have compassion for their fellow man. The second thing was that He also wanted them to remember is what did He bring to their remembrance again? What condition were they in for 400 years? What did they know what it felt like to be a slave, to be in bondage? Did they enjoy it? What did they do? We're told in Scripture that they were so oppressed by it that they pled to God, they pleaded to Him, they cried to Him. And God did finally release them from that bondage from Egypt. But He says, here's what it's like. You remember what it was like? Now when you're on this side, then how's it going to feel? So they had to keep that in mind, but they soon lost that and forgot that about how it felt of their time in Egypt. The other thing was, the land of Canaan was the inheritance that was given to each one in their families. And this is what, in captivity, they went back to their inheritance. That was theirs. And yet here now, they had to mortgage it off and give it off to someone else. They had to give their country home, their country farm, their old folks' place to somebody else. How did God feel about that? God didn't accept that. After a certain point in time, you were entitled back to that again. That was your inheritance. You get it back. So again, they were to lend to meet the poor's need freely on that. When you look at Leviticus, the 25th chapter. While we're there at Deuteronomy, the 15th chapter. While we're there. Again, verses 1 and 2. At the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. And this is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. So it was set in stone. Every 7 years, you let it go. Now, in Leviticus, the 25th chapter. Going back to the 25th chapter. In verses 10 through 13. You have the law regarding the year of Jubilee. You shall thus consecrate the 50th year and proclaim a release through the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a Jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his own property, and each of you shall return to his family. You shall have the 50th year as a Jubilee. You shall not sow nor reap its aftergrowth nor gather in from its untrimmed vines. For it is a Jubilee, it shall be holy to you. You shall eat its crops out of the field. On this year of Jubilee, each of you shall return to his own property. Even if it was after you were set at liberty at 7 years, if you weren't, the 50th year, it all reverted back on that. In chapter 25, again of Leviticus, in verse 14, if you make a sale, moreover to your friend, or buy from your friend's hand, you shall not wrong one another. They weren't to oppress one another. And the reason they weren't to wrong or oppress one another, again, is God is stressing the point. It is like the statement that was made in Exodus, the 23rd chapter, in verse 9. And you shall not oppress a stranger, since you yourselves know the feelings of a stranger, for you also were strangers in the land of Egypt. How soon they forgot. Those that were affluent become wealthy. How soon that they forgot in their treatment of the fellow man. They didn't have that problem back in Egypt because they were all on the same level. They were all in bondage and they all suffered together. And I'm sure that they all tried to help each other in their suffering that they went through and the oppression that they went to. Now here, years later, there are those that have become affluent, taking advantage of others. We also see that in the time of the kings, that you had those in the king's family that were even oppressing the people. And in that, you can also find that the priest even oppressed the people. And it was a continuance that went on that even in Jesus' time, the widows were being oppressed. The fatherless was being oppressed. And that is something that God hated. God absolutely hated because they had no one to defend them. They had no one to stand up for them. And God dislikes that. And that's made known in the New Testament. The oppression of widows and fatherless. So we have to be careful. And here, this was the main grievance of the people that they had that they brought to Nehemiah. We've done everything. And yet we're in a bind. And we're continuing to get deeper and deeper in a bind. And they shouldn't be doing this. That's why in verse 6 of chapter 5 that Nehemiah, upon hearing this, then I was very angry when I had heard their outcry in these words. Nehemiah was greatly disturbed because of the outcry against the nobles and the rulers. And it brought about, as Nehemiah thought about it, a rebuke from him against the nobles and rulers after their careful consideration on his part. He did find that they were truly charging interest, everyone against his brother. And I consulted with myself and contended with the nobles and the rulers and said to them, you are exacting usury, each from his brother. Therefore, I held a great assembly against them. He set this great assembly or a great body of witnesses over them and then pleads his case against them. He explains that according to their ability, they had repurchased their brethren, the Jews, who had been sold unto other nations. And he asked the rulers and the nobles, will you now sell your brethren? Or shall they be sold back? Then I said to them in verse 8, we according to our ability have redeemed our Jewish brothers who were sold to the nations, to the heathen nations. Now would you even sell your brothers that they may be sold to us? The effect upon the rulers and nobles were they were condemned. Then they were silent and could not find a word to say. Selling brethren was a heartless thing to do, even if it was lawful to pay a debt. It was still a heartless thing to do. Having advantage over the poor and doing this showed a total lack of love on the part of the settler who had upon the person who had or held that power. They had lost that compassion. And they weren't following the law that they were supposed to follow. Has anything changed differently in this day and time? Same stuff. Again, here's the temptation. Imagine what the people were going through. The resentment, bitter feelings, and so forth. How did they overcome it? Going back and appealing to what? To God's law. Appealing back to the conscience of the rulers and the nobles that this is what God's law said. And they were well aware of it. These bitter feelings would be created between the parties involved because it would convey a lack of interest in helping a poor person in his time of need. And we can see from the complaint and the grievances that bitter feelings had developed because they brought it to Nehemiah. God wants His people to be compassionate because that's God. That's one of His attributes. God's mercy is so great that He is compassionate. If He wasn't compassionate, why did He send Jesus? For those that would ignore Him and turn their back on Him. If He wasn't compassionate. That is one of the basic attributes of God. Compassion. People that are mean and vile, what does God do with them? He feeds them. He sends the rain on the just and on the unjust. Are they transgressing His law? Yes, they are. Is He still compassionate? Yes, He is. And we as Christians sometimes like that, of being compassionate to those that are in need, to those who are widows, because, oh, it might be a transgression of the law, so therefore we're not compassionate to them. Lord, have mercy on us when we do that. Because there's no one else to stand for their rights in the way that they are in. We need to have compassion to our fellow man. We need to have compassion, especially to those that are fellow Christians that are in a lesser shape than we are. We need to have that compassion no matter what. Yes, they may be doing wrong, but does that relieve us of doing our compassion to them? Does that relieve us of helping a widow or doing something for a widow because we've ignored the compassion because, well, they're doing wrong or they're not doing right or they're not doing what I think they ought to be doing? So therefore, I withhold compassion. Go back and read your Old Testament and see how the Lord felt of things that were done against the widows and the orphans and the children, the fatherless. God took it very strongly. Not only that, but also here. God took it strongly. He placed explicit orders. You have compassion. Nehemiah had to develop and implement a plan to stop this unjust practice among brethren. These nobles and rulers were convicted by the virtue of the scripture according that they held their peace and found nothing to answer in verse 8. They were guilty. Nehemiah further tells them that they ought to fear God. That's where it starts. That's where it ought to be at. And again, I said, the thing which you are doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations, our enemies? They were to need to walk in the fear of God because the heathen enemies that would take place due to their actions. The heathen nations would just eat that up and say, oh, look at that. Yeah, they're really serving God. What compassion do they have? They're doing the same thing we're doing. Nehemiah sets himself as an example that they could have required money and corn from the people, but did not, and pleads with the nobles and the rulers to leave off the interest and to restore back to the people their land, their vineyards, their homes, and a portion of the money, corn and wine, that they charged. Verses 10, and likewise I, my brothers, and my servants are lending them money and grain. Please let us leave off this usury. Please give back to them this very day their fields, their vineyards, their olive groves, and their houses. Also the hundredth part of the money and of the grain and the new wine and the oil that you are exacting from them. Give them back even a little bit more. Give them back 10%, a hundredth of what you took from them. What did the people do? They were convicted. Verse 12, the nobles and the rulers accepted the plan of Nehemiah and the oppression against their fellow Jews stopped. They restored back to the people and charged them no interest. Then they said, we will give it back and will require nothing from them. We will do exactly as they say, as you say. Here's what Nehemiah did. In verse 12 and 13, so I called the priest and took an oath from them that they would do according to this promise. This agreement was ratified by an oath before the priest that what was promised by the nobles and the rulers would be done as agreed upon. It would be done. That oath was between them, but more importantly, it was between who? Between them and God. That was the oath. I also shook out the front of my garment, verse 13, and said, thus may God shake out every man from his house and from his possession who does not fulfill this promise. Even thus may he be shaken out and emptied. What was there brought back? What did Nehemiah say? It's not that I'm going to do retribution against you. If you don't keep the oath and the promise that you made before God and before the others, who's going to justify it? Who's going to make amends to it? Who's going to mete out the punishment? God would. Maybe he may be shaken out and promised. And all the assembly said what? So be it. And they praised the Lord. Then the people did according to this promise. Why would they have praised the Lord? Why would they have given blessings? Why would they have done that to God? Something brought them together. Something brought them together. They recognized a wrong. It was all corrected by all in totality. The problem was solved, and the assembly, they praised the Lord because everyone was doing what was expected of them according to what the law said. And so they blessed God. You consider you sold your family, they're in servitude, you've mortgaged your fields and everything else, and then it's given back to you. How would you feel? Bless God for what He has done. Now, apply this over to the spiritual sense. We're in bondage to sin. We're in bondage to sin. We're slaves to sin. We have the death sentence upon us. God sent His Son so that we could have that relieved. Does that bring about praise to God when we accept that? Again, the same scenario, but yet on a spiritual sense on that. At the end of chapter 5, Nehemiah interjects his tenure as governor over the land of Judah, which lasted 12 years. We know from this, again, as we mentioned before in the very early stages of this study, that this was not written in real time. It was written later because here he interjects in the end of chapter 5 his tenure as 12 years as governor. So this had to have wrote by inference, had to have been wrote later. For him to be able to interject that in. If it was wrote in real time, the 12 years hadn't happened yet. Okay? But here it's submitted in. As governor over the land of Judah, which lasted 12 years, he offers that during this time, he did not tax the people, like the former governors who required bread, wine, and even 40 shekels of silver. The former governors oppressed the people even to the point that their servants bore rule over the people. But Nehemiah states that he required not because of one reason, and that was he feared God. He didn't do it because he feared God. He declares himself proper before the people in his integrity of ruling over them and not requiring anything from them because the bondage was heavy upon the people. when you look at it. They supported themselves, he and his administration, not dependent upon taxes. He did not take advantage of the poor to increase his personal wealth by means of buying land at reduced prices. Instead, he was benevolent to the people. He fed from his own table 150 rulers. He closes this with the request for God to think upon him for good and how he had conducted his actions as governor. How did Nehemiah's relationship with God affect his relationship and his personal actions? Things that you can look at. His relationship with others, his fellow Jews and his brethren. His relationship with others, non-brethren and adversaries. And his relationship with the government. When you look at those, how did his relationship with God affect all four of those? Nehemiah prays to God to think upon him for the good in how he treated God's people, his brethren. That's how he ends chapter 5. To think upon what he has done. Nehemiah could have charged more. Nehemiah could have charged the people and said, well, yeah, it's natural. I mean, I'm doing a service to you. There was a temptation for Nehemiah. I'm doing something for you. You know, I'm ruling. I'm putting up with this. I'm doing judgments. I'm doing all this and that and everything else. And you know, it's not going to hurt you to just give me a little bit or whatever. But Nehemiah didn't accept it. He provided for them. And again, he wasn't a master to them. He became a what? He was a servant to them. Even though he was in power of being the governor in that respect. So that ends chapter 5 concerning the things that are done. Any question or comments?
Larry, in verse 14, it talks about that he did not eat under the provision. Under the law of the rule at that time, the king would allow so much to those who were governing a particular district. So it talks about in verse 15, but the former governors who were before me laid on people burden and took bread from them besides the 40 shekels. I understand that to be tax money that was to be given them. They were allowed that. Nehemiah was allowed that, much like our mayors or our governors, or they were supported from our taxes. But they went beyond what was allowed to. It's not just a particular 40 shekels or silver, but other means you talk about the land and what they've done.
Take it over into the New Testament times. Very good point. Take it over in the New Testament times. Why were people like Matthew hated so bad? They collected taxes, but they could also, as you say, they could incur more. They were not to in what the people said in that one respect. What does God require of us? They said, what? Don't exact more than what you're supposed to. So it became a tendency to do that, and it always has been through all time. And very good points to the elder. They took what they were allowed by the government, and then they took more. But again, they were allowed to by government, but what did Nehemiah do? He gave up that legal right that he had because of his fellow brethren, the compassion for them. He gave up that legal right. So we can do the same thing today. We have legal rights that we can do in many areas and aspects concerning I can take this or I can take that and whatever on tax returns or whatever. And you can, but it's something you have to look at as far as, well, could I not exercise that right, even though I have it?
Yeah, then I think the money that he used for the feeding, he talked about there are those who fed, he used his own money, and he would have been paid as being the wine taster for the king.
Possible. He reaped many benefits from being the cupbearer to the royal king.
But he used the money that he would have earned as far as his particular function in the king.
Yes, right. Okay. Any other question or comment? All right. Thank you.